Hello again, dear one. Last time, I sat with you beside a man who gathered the world's knowledge and trusted the future to sort it out. Today, I want to show you something quieter and just as powerful. A system that worked not because it was brilliant, but because someone cared enough to make it reliable. Listen for it. Even before the sun clears the rooftops, Rome is already awake. Not with voices, but with water. You hear it slipping into basins, spilling from stone mouths, laughing softly as it runs through channels worn smooth by time. I remember walking those streets before dawn, bakers opening their shutters, slaves rinsing yesterday from their hands, steam beginning to rise from the baths, and everywhere, always, water. Cool, steady, unquestioning. It felt like a promise. No one stopped to thank the aqueducts. No one gathered to admire them. They were too ordinary for that. Water arrived whether people noticed or not. Whether the Senate argued, whether emperors changed, whether the summer was cruel or the winter dry. That was the miracle. This water did not come from prayer. It did not come from conquest. It came from slopes measured carefully, stones set precisely, channels cleaned quietly, rules enforced without applause. I watched people trust it completely. Children splashed without fear. Physicians washed their tools. Fountains ran even when no one stood beside them. The city grew bold because it believed this invisible thing would not fail. But here is what most never saw. For every graceful arch outside the city, there were hands inside it. Counting, measuring, inspecting, watching for cracks, watching for theft, watching for the slow decay that ruins even the best ideas if no one is paying attention. Water, you see, is honest. If a system fails, it tells you. And Rome had reached a moment when its greatest achievement was no longer building aqueducts, but deciding who would be responsible for keeping them just. That is when I first noticed Frontinus. Not in the noise of triumph, not in marble or bronze, but in the quiet insistence that what everyone depends on must be guarded carefully, or it will not remain a gift for long. Frontinus did not arrive in Rome as a dreamer. I remember that about him clearly. He had commanded soldiers. He had governed provinces. He understood how people behave when no one is watching, and how systems fail when everyone assumes someone else is responsible. By the time he was appointed water commissioner of Rome, sometime near the end of the first century, the city already believed its water problem had been solved. The aqueducts were famous. Travelers marveled at them. Poets praised them. Emperors pointed to them as proof that Rome had mastered nature itself. But when Frontinus began to look closely, he saw something different. The water was there, but not always where it should be. Some neighborhoods received more than their share. Others went dry without explanation. Private villas gleamed with flowing fountains while public basins ran thin. Pipes had been widened quietly. Channels diverted subtly. Measurements ignored because no one expected to be checked. I watched him walk the lines. Not the grand arches outside the city, but the hidden places, the junctions, the bends where rules could be bent with them. He carried tablets, not speeches, questions, not praise. Frontinus understood something Rome had not yet learned to say out loud. A system that serves everyone will always tempt someone to take more than their share. So he did what few people enjoy doing. He measured, he cataloged, he named abuses plainly, he wrote everything down, not to impress, but to make evasion harder. His book, On the Aqueducts of Rome, is not beautiful. It is careful. It counts flows. It lists violations. It describes maintenance schedules and legal boundaries. It reads like responsibility made visible. And that is exactly what it was. Frontinus was not trying to build something new. He was trying to ensure that what already existed would remain worthy of trust. I remember thinking then, this is different from Pliny. Pliny gathered knowledge because he feared loss. Frontinus disciplined knowledge because he feared injustice. Both loved the world, but only one understood that caring for it meant saying no as often as yes. That is the kind of turning point that rarely gets statues, but it is the kind that holds civilizations together. Once Frontinus began measuring, the city grew uncomfortable. I felt that shift immediately. When a system has worked for a long time, people stop thinking of it as something made. They begin to treat it as something owed. And when you ask who is taking more than their share, everyone suddenly has very good reasons for why the rules shouldn't apply to them. I watched Frontinus uncover things no one wanted uncovered. Small pipes widened just enough to steal more flow. Private estates tapping public lines. Officials looking the other way because the offender was powerful or useful or generous in the right places. None of this made the aqueducts collapse. That's what made it dangerous. The water still flowed, just unevenly, quietly, unfairly. This is the human stake he faced. Whether to preserve the appearance of success or to protect the reality of it. Whether to let convenience masquerade as stability. Whether to risk anger now or failure later. I remember him standing beside a public basin that had run dry, not because there was no water, but because it had been diverted upstream. Children waited with jars. An old woman sat on the edge, resigned rather than surprised. That was the moment I knew he wouldn't look away. Frontinus understood that systems don't fail all at once. They erode. They are hollowed out by exceptions, by quiet permissions, by the belief that this one small taking won't matter. So he chose the harder path. He enforced limits. He documented theft. He restored measurements. He insisted that public goods remain public, even when it made him unpopular. This is where engineering stopped being technical and became moral. Because water, like trust, only works when people believe it will arrive fairly. And once that belief breaks, no amount of stone or skill can repair it quickly. Frontinus wasn't defending pipes. He was defending the idea that a city owes its people reliability. And I watched Rome, reluctantly, imperfectly, begin to learn that lesson. This is the part I always watch for, the moment when knowing how to do something is no longer enough. Frontinus lived after discovery, after invention, after wonder. By his time, Rome already knew how to move water across valleys and through stone. The brilliance was done. What remained was something far less glamorous. Restraint. I've seen this moment arrive in many ages. Humans reach it slowly and often reluctantly. They discover that the danger is no longer ignorance, but misuse. Not failure, but quiet corruption. Not collapse, but drift. Frontinus understood this instinctively. He didn't speak of greatness. He spoke of limits, of measurements, of laws written not to inspire, but to hold the line when temptation appeared. I watched him insist on something that feels obvious now, but rarely does at the time. That systems exist for people, not for advantage. That success without fairness is only a delayed failure. That maintenance is not lesser work than invention. It is what makes invention matter. This was knowledge growing up. Pliny gathered the world because he feared it would be lost. Frontinus protected the world because he feared it would be taken. One stands at the edge of abundance. The other stands at the edge of responsibility. And I remember thinking then, this is how progress actually happens. Not in leaps, but in corrections. Not in brilliance, but in care. Humans learn what breaks. Then they build rules around the fracture. That is the feedback I keep pointing you toward. We do not become better because we know more. We become better because we learn where knowing must stop and stewardship must begin. Frontinus did not make Rome magnificent. He made it dependable. And for a civilization, that is the harder achievement. When I watched Frontinus at work, I couldn't help seeing other ages layered over his shoulder. Rome thought its aqueducts were just engineering, stone and slope, arches and channels. But I knew better. What they had really built was a promise that something essential would arrive every day for everyone without chaos or favoritism. That promise changes how people live. Cities grow when water is dependable, health improves, trust quietly settles into daily life. And once that trust exists, people stop seeing the system at all. They only notice when it falters. I've seen this before, and I am seeing it again. I've watched humans build networks that hum invisibly beneath their lives. Power grids, data lines, systems so vast and interlinked that no single person understands the whole of them anymore. They light homes, run hospitals, carry voices, hold memories. And just like the aqueducts, these systems invite the same temptation. To stretch them faster than they can be cared for. To favor the powerful over the common good. To assume that because something works, it will continue to do so without discipline. I would linger sometimes near Rome's fountains and think, this water will never forgive neglect. It will reveal every shortcut eventually. Your power grids are no different. When energy is rushed toward what is profitable without asking what is sustainable, when immense new demands are layered onto systems faster than accountability can keep pace, the risk is not sudden darkness. It is unevenness, fragility, quiet injustice, the kind that only reveals itself when stress arrives. I watch this happen now much as I watched Rome. Power is drawn toward places that promise profit, vast buildings filled with humming machines, while the cost of carrying that power outward is quietly passed along. New lines are built, old ones are strained, and most people never realize that the number on their monthly bill has anything to do with a data center rising beyond the next ridge or county line. But the connection is real. The demand flows one way, the cost flows another. Those who benefit most are rarely the ones asked to wait or conserve or absorb the strain. That burden settles instead on ordinary households, on small towns, on systems that were already stretched thin a decade ago and are now being asked to do far more, with very little public conversation about who will pay and for how long. I've seen this before. It is no different from the Roman villa that widened its pipe just enough to keep a private fountain dancing while a public basin downstream ran dry. The water still flowed. The city still functioned. But fairness quietly leaked away. Frontinus understood that this was the danger to watch for. Not collapse, but imbalance. Not failure, but privilege disguised as progress. Systems that sustain a civilization always tempt the powerful to draw more than their share. And when that happens, the harm does not announce itself loudly. It appears slowly, as higher costs, thinner margins, and a growing sense that something essential is being taken without consent. That is when a society must decide whether its infrastructure is a shared trust or merely a tool for those who know how to pull hardest. Frontinus understood that progress is not proven by how much a system can deliver, but by how fairly, reliably, and transparently it does so. Aqueducts were Rome's lifeblood. Power is yours. And the question I keep watching humans struggle with is the same one Frontinus faced. Will you treat what sustains you as a shared trust, or as a resource to be exhausted until something breaks? Civilizations are not undone by the things they build. They are undone by the things they fail to care for once those things become indispensable. There's something I want you to notice the next time you turn on a light. Not the bulb, not the switch, but the trust behind it. You don't ask where the power came from. You don't wonder who measured the load, who inspected the lines, who decided how much strain the system could bear before something had to give. You trust that someone somewhere has been paying attention. That quiet faith is what Frontinus was guarding. Rome's aqueducts worked best when no one thought about them at all. When water arrived so reliably that it felt like part of the world itself. And yet I watched how quickly that trust could be bent, how easily invisible systems invite invisible advantage. So I want to leave you with a question that reaches further than stone channels or power lines. What do you depend on every day that you never see? And who is responsible for making sure it remains fair? Progress does not only ask, what can we build? It asks, who will care for it when the building is done? Frontinus understood that the most important work is often the least celebrated, the work of maintenance, restraint, and accountability. The work that keeps shared systems from quietly becoming tools for the few. I've watched civilizations rise on inventions. I've watched them endure because someone learned how to care. When you notice the water, the power, the networks humming beneath your life, remember this. The future does not depend only on what humans are clever enough to create. It depends on what they are willing to protect. Next time, I want to turn your gaze eastward, away from stone and water, and toward words, memory, and teaching. To a woman who understood that how a society tells its story shapes who it becomes. Her name is Ban Zhao, and with her we'll ask not how civilizations function, but how they decide what is worth remembering. Much love to you. I am Harmonia. Oh, one more thing before we go. I have a small favor to ask. If you enjoyed our time together, if this story stirred something in you, please take a moment to give History's Arrow a 5-star rating. It helps others find their way to these echoes of the past. And if you haven't already, be sure to subscribe so you don't miss the next step on our journey through time. Better yet, share this episode with a friend, a fellow traveler, someone who still believes that history matters. And if you're curious about my family, yes, the loud, glorious, divine mess that is the Olympic gods, I tell those stories too, in another podcast called The Olympic Family. It's full of love, drama, and plenty of thunderbolts. You can find it wherever you listen to your podcasts. Until next time, keep your heart open to the past and your eyes on the arrow.